listeners, and welcome back to the Victim to Victor podcast. In today's episode, I have Chris Pedretti on my show. Chris is a brave survivor and the 10th victim of Californian murderer and rapist Joseph DeAngelo, also known as the Golden State Killer. Life changed in an instant for Chris when, at the age of 15, the Golden State Killer crept into her family home and brutally raped her for hours. He was finally caught when police teamed up with a genetic genealogist who was able to use DNA data in public genealogy websites and eventually link it back to him. With his capture, Chris felt that for the first time she was on the road to healing. But what she found was that the real beginning of her journey of healing wasn't his capture. It was the fact of saying out loud, "This happened to me." That was so freeing and started her road to recovery. Listen on to hear Chris's remarkable story of recovery and how she is now inspiring many other survivors to gain confidence to share their stories. So I have Chris Pedretti on my show today on the Victim to Victor podcast. How are you today, Chris?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
I know, it's been such a pleasure. And I know that you've got a very important story and insight to share with the world. And for those of you who don't know Chris Pedretti, she is over the internet because she obviously is a woman who has been from tragedy to triumph. And you'll see that, you know, she reveals her path to healing after surviving an attack from a serial killer, the Golden State Killer. So, Chris, I understand that, you know, you have obviously had a journey of success where you've been helping many other survivors, but it'd just be good to obviously get your insight about what exactly happened and also, you know, where you are today.
Okay, that sounds great. And yes, I have been on this journey for 42 years, and only in the last couple of years have I really been able to make some great progress. So I'm excited to share my story and hopefully add some support for your listeners as well. So I was 15 years old, and, you know, as a 15-year-old, you know, your world's pretty small. So it was a week before Christmas, and that's all that was on my mind. Christmas shopping, baking cookies, you know, all of the normal things you do before Christmas. And My parents were going to a Christmas party that night, and they left probably at 6:30. You know, it wasn't late. My sister was at work, and she'd be off by 9. And so I thought it was great that I got to be home alone, you know?
Yeah.
And my girlfriend came over. We were, you know, just doing girl stuff. And she had to go home because her mom wanted her to make cookies. So that just left me home. So I popped a pizza, frozen pizza, in the oven. Mm-hmm. And I started to play the piano, just probably Christmas songs. I'm not sure. Oh. But shortly after that, within probably minutes, I felt like there was something kind of in my peripheral vision that was kind of moving quickly. And I looked, trying to, like, what was that? And before I could even turn my head, I had a knife at my throat and a masked man telling me that if I screamed, he would push the knife all the way through my throat and he would kill me.
Goodness. Okay.
And so, you know, at that moment, honestly, I like to refer to it as I kind of turned into a robot zombie, right? Like, I just did what I was told. And I think I probably went straight into survival mode. So I just followed orders. And he took me outside, tied me up in, I don't know what the weather is in London at Christmas time, but in California, you know, and it's cold.
Yeah.
And he cut my clothes off, and I sat outside on a picnic bench while he went back in the house. I could hear my pizza timer going off. Right. And he was just ransacking the house and cussing and, you know, damn it. And just, I don't know what he was actually doing, but then he came back and got me. And then he pulled me back in the house to my parents' bedroom and raped me on their bed. And I had no experience with sex, you know, at 15. And so I really didn't know what was going to happen next, you know, and he took me back outside and then he did some more ransacking, probably stealing things inside the house, and then pulled me back into the family room this time, then back outside, then one more time in the house. And then it became very, very quiet. And at that time I thought, oh, you know, like he's gone. Yeah. And so I moved, but he was right there. He just, one of the things about this Golden State Killer, Joseph DeAngelo, is he is very quiet and still. Like he could stay crouched for hours waiting, you know, so you don't know when he's there. So of course the knife was back at my throat telling me to not move. And I'm just talking, I'm tied up in gags. So I'm talking like my elbow moved, you know, like he's watching.
Wow.
And that happened twice more. And at one point I thought he'd set the house on fire and I was going to burn. But he had actually just turned the fireplace on and rearranged the furniture. So where I knew the couch was, it wasn't anymore. So I thought the couch was on fire, but it was just next to the fire. But, you know, I wouldn't know that until, you know, I don't know, 5 minutes later when I didn't catch on fire, I realized that, you know, you're just disoriented anyways when you can't see anything.
Yeah.
So finally I just decided, you know, I kind of came back from that zombie mode and decided, I have to get up. If he's still there, so be it. Like I can't do this anymore. So I guess at that point I pretty much accepted that I was going to die. And, but he wasn't there. And so I was able to kind of hop. I couldn't get out of the bindings, but hop over to the door to make sure it was unlocked so somebody could get in. And I thought, I remember thinking, oh man, if he comes out of a room, that there's nothing I can do. But he was gone. And my neighbors came over and rescued me and they called the police. And you know, from there, the next part of your traumatization starts, right? With the police. And then I don't know where you are, if you have rape kits, but then the hospital and, that's just a horrible experience from beginning to end where I believe most victims feel re-traumatized, you know, through that next important step if you choose to take it. But
How is it still sharing that story?
You know, it's a little bit emotional, but the more you share, the more it gets a little bit easier to tell.
Yeah.
And I had some incredible trauma therapy and that really, really helped. She used a technique called brain spotting. Have you heard of that? Or EMDR?
EMDR, yeah.
Yeah, and that really helps to desensitize. It doesn't make it go away, but it keeps the triggers and like the flashbacks more under control.
Yeah. And I guess that's what it is when it comes to PTSD. It's the flashbacks, you know, it's just things that will remind you of him, I guess, you know, your home as well. I mean, how was it going back home once that had happened?
I don't remember, to be honest with you. I think I was just in shock. And my parents, you know, as many people's parents, I don't know why. I choose to think they were just trying to protect me, but we were ordered to never talk about it. Oh, wow. So that, and I never did. So that day, 2 days later, I went to church camp
okay.
for 4 days, you know, like nothing happened.
Yeah.
and then came home and had Christmas. So my sister, who's 2 years older than me, we did not talk about it until 2018.
Wow.
Believe it or not, even sisters, told us not to talk about, we didn't talk about it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Because all of the, news articles on the internet, they're all pretty recent. So
yes.
Yeah. So there would have been quite a few years there where you were just kept in silent.
42 years.
Wow.
And I can say this, you know, that silence doesn't make it go away. No. And silence, even if you don't communicate it verbally, your body will communicate distress. And you're exactly right. The PTSD, the triggers, and the for some people, they don't want to go anywhere. They're afraid to go out. Some people don't ever want to have sex. Some people they're promiscuous, you know, like it just really hits, it affects bodies differently. And I know for me, I did not even understand that I was acting probably not normally because, you know, I didn't have anything to compare it to. Mm-hmm. And the best way I can say it, and I think many of your listeners who are victors would agree that you just get through day by day. Like each day is a day that you've survived the best way that you can.
Yeah.
And because I, again, of my age, I knew that night I would never be that person again. Nice. Christmas would never be a good memory for me again. And I knew that what I did the day before wouldn't feel right ever again, because I was trusting and I was innocent and I was, you know, really a child. But I didn't know how to be anything other. So I was kind of stuck in this, who am I place for a long time. And that caused many failed relationships, two marriages. I kept quitting jobs, all these things that I now know is PTSD, but because I never got any help, I had no idea that what I was doing was strange, and the nightmares and all of that. And with no support, you just start to accept it. And until the day you find out that there's hope, which is why I'm here.
Wow. And so how long after that did they capture this evil man?
42 years later.
Oh my goodness.
2018, April 2018, they had caught him. And it's funny because people ask me a lot, like, hey, how were you so happy? What a relief. And I was like, no. And they look at me like, what? Why? Like, what more could you want? Well, because people, you know, like that's the end of the story, because it's always the end of every TV show. Oh, no one cares about after, right? That's just the end. And in reality, that's just chapter two.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, I had convinced myself that he was dead. Wow. And that's how I could, you know, get through a day, because he, you know, we kind of knew he must have lived in the same city because everything was right around here.
Yeah.
And so when he was caught, it was like this monster had risen from the dead. And I was on a business trip, and I got a phone call. So none of my support was with me. I was just by myself in a hotel room. And I went right back to where I left off at 15. I started shaking uncontrollably. I felt like I had to escape, but I didn't know where to go. I couldn't decide a simple decision. Should I take a shower or should I just get on a plane? But I couldn't even dial a phone. And, you know, what was going through my head was like, what if I know him? I'm going to see a face now. Like in 3 hours, they're going to do a press release and I'm going to be looking at this person who was faceless.
That's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So my boss, I finally made it down there, and she actually made all the arrangements for me and just got me on a plane. And I flew home crying the whole way. Wow. I think that I was in the middle seat, right? Last seat. And the two gentlemen on either side of me just didn't quite know what to say, or do I just act like this person's not falling apart next to me? It was very awkward, but you know, I got home and I didn't know him, and he's just a disgusting
old
man.
Exactly. So yeah, I was going to say, because when you looked at him, is that all you're for? Just disgust.
Yes. Gross. Good. And disgust.
Yeah. That's interesting. And like, just looking at his images, he looks like a very big man. So that would have been quite, you know, traumatizing for you at the age of 15, when you're just a little girl, just having this big guy over you. It's horrible.
I don't remember that. That's kind of when I just went. But what was, you know, and still continues to be a trigger. And I don't think he was that big then. Like he gained a lot of weight. He could lose weight. But he was a cop.
So
yeah, he was a cop. So I never realized until he got caught, why I was just so nervous around police officers. I mean, there was a theory that he was a police officer. So obviously I'd heard that, but, to this day, if a police officer were to walk up to my door, I'd be terrified, because we know that there are bad cops out there, and I experienced one of them. So just because they have a uniform on really doesn't mean what it should mean. Right.
Exactly.
They're not always out to protect and serve and protect.
But it's just a job, I guess. You know, it's not like they're angels of any sort. It's a job which pays them. But it's interesting why they called this Golden State Killer the ultimate bogeyman. Strange.
Yeah. Well, I think they called him that because this, like I said, he could stay crouched for hours. You know, he would stalk you. Well, he didn't stalk just me. Like, he was stalking neighborhoods, and when the opportunity arose, he took it. But he could just like sitting right next to me. You just never knew. He just came out of the blue. He just would appear, and you know. And after me, you know, I was the 10th victim, and I think around the 16th, he started to attack couples, and the poor men would have to lay with his hands tied with dishes on his back. And if he tried to get out, they would fall off. And so, and he would be telling, you know, the man, I'm going to kill your wife and I'm going to kill you. And then of course from there, he actually went into murdering people.
Oh goodness.
He's a bad guy.
He is. Yeah. So, I'm really glad that they caught him, but it just seems like there would have been a lot of incidences up until that time that he was caught, which really saddens me, because he was getting away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, he was a cop until he got arrested for shoplifting dog repellent and a hammer, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. And my personal feeling is he needed to shoplift it because this is his way of not getting, you know, him thinking it through that they could never trace this back to me, you know, because he didn't own it or there's no, but they caught him and he got fired after that.
Oh, well, goodness. Yeah. Fired for shoplifting. Forget about all the other incidents.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. And it was just, because, you know, just looking at your image of you in tears, you know, that saddens me as well. And I could just see it in your eyes how, you know, you really want to be out there inspiring other victims. So tell us where this journey brought you.
So, you know, once he got caught, I would say I was just in survival mode and little self-destructiveness going on there. And then when he got caught, like I said, that part of the journey took me all the way back to the night it happened. And I started getting all the triggers and panic attacks and terrible nightmares. And I thought I had to quit my job. I cried all the time. And I think it was needed because for so long I had kept it in. I told my family, told my sister, you know, well, she already knew, but we spoke about it openly, got the police report. So I was able to read everything that happened to me. So it was a very vulnerable time. Yeah. And we have a thing here called the Victims Compensation Fund. Okay. And they actually paid for our therapy. And so I found this amazing trauma therapist and I went every single week for 2 years. And it was just, I call it heavy lifting, right? It's like every time I just didn't want to go back there because I knew we just had a lot of work to do. But from there, as I began to heal and as I began to tell my story, it really helped with the support that we received. And we did receive a lot of community support because the D'Angelo, I will call him, that's his last name, Joseph D'Angelo, he terrorized this entire community out here. People, like, people would sleep in shifts. People would hang things by their windows so that if anyone tried to get in, it would, you know, like a wind chime, it would ring. Gun sales went all the way up. Everybody was locking or changing their locks. There were helicopters. It was a big thing and nobody felt safe. No one. So, yeah, he really terrorized many. And anyway, so as I healed, my therapist kept telling me, you should write a story. And I'm like, I don't want to write a story. Like because I started a journal and I never wanted to go back and read it. It's just, it was just not good memories. So I said, but maybe I could tell my story. And so at that time, a TV station had reached out and asked if I would like to tell my story. And that took so much courage. Oh my gosh. I was so scared. But that was the beginning of my way of telling my story. And I got a lot of comments. So from there, I decided, you know what? There are so many women that did not get the support that I had. And so many women that have been holding this for so long because of so many reasons. They may not be believed, or it's a family member that assaulted them and they're afraid. They think it's their fault and they've been shamed. Yeah. You know, like, and I'm sure, I mean, there's so many reasons. And I thought, I need to give a safe place for these women. So I started a group and it's called Sexual Assault Survivors. It's Time to Tell Your Story. And I thought, how is anyone going to even find me, you know? but they did. And I'm at about 600 and there are many, many, advocates, you know, like the people that had been affected in the community, or maybe someone knows somebody, that was assaulted and they want to know how to be a better support system for them. And then of course, so many, victims, we had one that, said that she hadn't spoken about it in 62 years. Wow. And so that is where that led me and where I'm at now with the group is trying to provide a safe place and anyone can join. And it is private though. Like I have to accept you in and I do protect, all of our vulnerabilities. If, you know, if there was ever anything that happened to get out of line, I would take care of it. I'm on it every single day.
Yeah.
And then from there, cause COVID here in the States is they're allowing us to see each other outside. So I have, it's called UBU and that's once a month and people come in person. Yeah. And I have a large yard. So, you know, we're safe. Everybody has to be vaccinated or show me a negative COVID test, but we have different speakers and we have brunch and we meet each other for the first time. And there's an opportunity for everyone who wants to tell their story at the end out loud. Yeah. Or for those that didn't report or they didn't get their cases, prosecuted, you know, they so there wasn't enough evidence or whatnot. We gave the opportunity for people to tell their victim impact statement if they could, because that's very healing. Mm-hmm. So we do those once a month. So right now, that's what I'm personally doing, you know, with the group. And I'm also reaching out to people as yourselves to get the word out that there's support, to just, you know, you don't have to be alone. And it is so imprisoning and isolating to put yourself in a cage and so afraid to go out and live your life, because we still have so much life left and no one has the right to take that from us.
They don't. Absolutely. I know. And I think when it comes to actually sexual crimes as well, that's the worst, because, you know, they're taking away our innocence at such a young age. I mean, I just feel that that is the worst crime. I know, you know, you can't really, you know, compare the different crimes because they're all as bad as each other. But
yeah,
I don't know. There's something about sexual crimes which really, like for me, it's traumatizing. And I guess,
yeah,
it's,
well, I think we live, I think we live in a kind of a rape culture. And, you know, it's here, I can only speak about here, it's very normalized. And it's really up to the woman to protect herself. No one says to the man, hey, just don't rape. It's women, like, don't wear short skirts, or keep the keys in your, between your fingers when you go to your car, or don't stay out too late, or don't flirt, or why did you let him in? Yes. And no one looks at the man. And the rape jokes are ridiculous, right? And TV shows, you know, it's all normalized. And so that's why we do put ourselves in prison. And then we don't trust anyone because we're afraid to say anything. But if we all, if 3 out of 4 women don't report, and I think it's 1 out of 6 women will have an attempted rape or be raped in their lifetime. Imagine if everybody's voices came together and we broke out and said, forget this. We know that this isn't our fault. We know this is the culture, but we don't have to accept that. Imagine how powerful that would be.
Yeah, that would be, wouldn't it? Yeah. And I guess it's educating the men, the boys, you know, as parents, we should be educating our boys and just, you know, building their self-esteem, because a lot of the reason why people go and commit crimes is because they're lacking within themselves. And, you know, they want that power, they want that control. And so they get that by overpowering their victims, you know, and it feels good to them, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think also, you know, the educating by the parents, I mean, I do think that's important, but so many people are victimized by their parents. They are not going to get their education there. Mm. It's got to get into the schools. You know, what does consent mean? And no, you're not really being popular. I remember when I was younger, oh, did you make out? You know, like that was a thing. God.
Yeah.
And that's how boys became popular. Yeah. Boys became popular and girls became sluts. I mean, it just... Right?
Exactly. I know. So sexist, right?
Yeah. That's the culture we live in. And that's what these kids are growing up in. It's not just the parents. It's everything that's around them.
Yeah. But I do think times are changing now, because I see it. I just feel that girls are a lot more empowered these days, you know, and I think boys are probably getting left behind.
Yeah. And they need that education.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay. You're fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's the boys that need the education.
It is. Yeah. And I think, you know, you're right. It has to come from the school setting and home setting. So, and more needs to be done on this, you know, to change our world, to change our future, our kids' futures, because, yeah, this can't continue. And, I mean, you know, I suppose with the COVID lockdown now, there has been increases of, you know, paedophilia, because there's been a lot, you know, everyone's been at home. And, you know, I think it's obviously made the paedophiles, you know, worse, because they've, you know, they're not able to get out, so they've basically just been you know, using that time upon their kids or grandkids. And, you know, there have been reports out in the UK. I'm unsure about the stats in the States. I don't know if, you know, much, if there's been much released about that in the States.
I haven't heard anything. That doesn't mean it hasn't been out there. I just don't feel like we talk about that. I feel like nobody wants to hear it.
I know. It's,
you know, sad. Yeah. Yeah. It's sad because if you hear it, excuse me, you have to address it.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and these are things I actually hear, you know, oh, this wouldn't happen in my neighborhood, or no, we're in a safe area. And there is no safe neighborhood or safe area. I mean, assault, people that assault are they're, oh my God, they're priests, right? How much do we hear of that?
Oh, goodness.
And lawyers,
yes.
And doctors. And so they're, you know, I remember one of the first times I spoke out, and a TV station was coming here, or it was HBO, I believe. And my own neighbor told the other neighbor that, look at her, she just wants attention.
Oh,
that's why
goodness.
She's doing all this.
That's awful.
Yeah. But that's our society. No one wants to think about it. And today, and if anyone else has ever heard that, the answer is, you're damn straight, I want attention. I want people to know about sexual assault, and to be able to, especially for women and for men that have been assaulted, to not internalize it, to reach out, there's support, people get therapy. Like, I wasted 4 decades of my life. And I plan on living a couple more decades. So, you know, I'm going to live them, but I wouldn't have if I didn't get the support from people in my group, in my community, coupled with the therapy. And they kind of went together.
Yeah.
But no, I would still be just surviving. So.
God, rather than thriving, which is what I see today upon you. I mean, you know, and I can see that, you know, you really want to make an impact out there. And I just wanted to ask, you know, what is the first thing that you would recommend for my listeners, for somebody who may have been sexually assaulted and they're suffering in silence?
My first thing would be is to find support, whether it's through a group like mine or a friend that you trust. I have found to tell my story was the absolute most scary thing I've ever done because I had just been told to never tell it. And when I did tell it, there was like a sense of relief, you know, and a little bit of panic. Oh my gosh, because once it's out there, it's out there. But then the love came, and the people that don't love it, I don't need them. And I know that now because I've got 600 people every day pretty much telling somebody or myself that they love me and that there's hope. And most people that do join, I'm going to say a group, but I can just really speak for mine, but I'm sure it's the same. They don't say anything for a few months. Like, no one's called out. You just read. And then usually someone will say, I have a story, but I'm not ready to tell it. And oh my gosh, everyone's like, that's okay. It's your story. You own it. Mm. When you're ready, we're here. Like, there's just no judgment.
Good.
Cause I don't think you can shed that isolation and the secret by hiding from it. Like, it's not going to happen. It will just grow. And, there is a lot of hope, and it is not your fault, listeners. You know, it's not your shame. It's not your blame. It's his and only his. So it's okay to talk about it.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I couldn't have said that better myself. Yeah, so definitely for like the number one thing that anybody out there should be doing right now is to seek a counsellor, therapist, even if it's just picking up the phone to a trusted family member or a friend. Yes. Just share your story. I mean, you know, a lot of my healing came from writing. So, you know, you might want to just start writing about it. How about yourself, Chris? Do you actually have you written about this in a book?
No, I tried writing and I don't know. Every time I've written something, I don't want to go back and read it again. But speaking of, you just really touched on something. I did a presentation and it's on my site and it's on YouTube. And it's whether or not to tell your story. And in this presentation, it talks about the benefits and it talks about the drawbacks, you know, like, yeah, once you say it, I mean, you don't know how people are going to react. Look at my next door neighbor. Right. That's just something you have to look at and be ready for. And then it also talks about how to choose who you want to tell. Yeah. And part of that was the how to tell, like you just said, you wrote. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming this podcast probably has a lot to do with your healing as well by reaching out to others. Mm-hmm. I have a friend that is a musician and she wrote a song about survivors and she's a survivor and she played it at one of our the weekend brunches. I have a shed. So it doesn't take much. I have a rotting shed in my backyard. You know, it was ugly. So one day I decided to paint it and then it looked pretty again. And then I thought, no, wait, I don't even know how this came to me, but I'm going to make a tree and it's going to be my healing tree. And so everything on this tree has something to do with my journey. Like there's a face with, you know, like masking tape over their mouth, you know, like, silence, and there's a bird in a cage and then there's a bird flying away. And there's, I mean, it's filled with, it's really healing. I just go out there and paint. And then it has like, it's got the day it happened, you know, big fireball. And then it's got like little, I add leaves. When I feel like I'm getting past a certain point, I'll go add some leaves. So my goal is this tree will cover up all of that at some point.
Wow.
And then the top of the shed is for survivors when they come over or anyone to write messages to others.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And that is more healing for me than writing.
You know,
another gal sent me a book. She draws and she had been paying attention to what people had said. And she had made an illustrated book with all the phrases and comments that she had heard that had meant a lot to her. And she sent it to me on my birthday and she's out in Illinois, which is far away from here and Midwest. I think, I'm sorry, I'm talking so much. You just touched on something that was
so it's important. It is. And I think, you know, the message of that we're obviously delivering here is the fact that you find your own ways to express your hurt and your pain. You know, a lot of musicians and artists, they find that through their craft. You know, they like songwriters, a lot of songs are written out of pain, you know, and artists as well. You know, you find that a lot of the best artists, they were loners. And so they express themselves through their art. And I guess, you know, when it comes to creativity like that, it's to do with belongingness, you know, that they've found that belongingness, you know, through their work. And I guess it's the same with yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. And so kind of bottom line is to tell your story doesn't mean it has to be out loud.
Yeah.
You do it however you want to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Oh, thank you. So where will we see you go from here, Chris? What's your plans for the future?
I want to take my understanding a little bit further. So I actually visited our police department last week, and they have, there's a great podcast out there. It's called After the Assault, and it really goes into like the evidence and how our case is cleared and they've got victims. And I heard that. And one of the things they had said is that things are changing. And now, like for the interview room, they have a soft interview room. Oh. And I thought, you know what? I need to learn more about where we are now. Because I remember what it was like then. So I went down and met with the detective and sat in the room. It's beautiful. And in that discussion, I had asked, you know, do you train your detectives? Do they hear from victims? Like, do they know more than how to write a report?
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, we do yearly trainings or twice a year, but we don't have any victims. And I said, I would love to come speak. So I now, along with the group and the therapy that I had, I am definitely in a place where I'm not going to stop. So I would like to be more of an advocate and give back to the community that I live in and, you know, keep working for people to feel safe and, and trust. You know, and so whatever, wherever that takes me, that is where I am going next.
Oh, wow. And yeah, we're looking forward to seeing more of you because I know your journey's probably only just begun, right?
I think so. I do think so. Yeah.
Oh, that's
2019,
amazing.
I believe, is when all this started. You know, after I had enough therapy support to feel like I could offer anything, it was 2019 at that point.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I guess it's similar with me. It took me like a decade of working on myself and healing, and you know, trying to discover who I really was until I was able to share my story and to be here today.
That is really interesting. You said that. I mean, I'd like to. I know this is an interview for me, but you know, what did you say? It took you a decade to kind of find who you were.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that I think. That really hit me. And you said it, like you said it really well. Like you're not who you were before. You have to find the new you. Yeah. How did you do that?
Wow. I did that again. I think we do share similar paths where I've had many failed relationships and one divorce. And it was only really when I became a mom, I discovered love. Because I never knew what love was, you know, I just never understood what love was. And obviously I had, you know, I had like unconditional love for my child, but I think the number one person that I needed to love was myself. And that took me ages to try and understand, because every time I looked in the mirror, I hated myself. And it was like, you know, so I used to look and think, oh, you know, I need to change that. I need to change that. Oh, you know, it's just horrible just looking at myself in the mirror. And then it was just accepting who I was and, you know, not being so hard on myself. Again, it, you know, it took me a lot of stages to get there, but it was just like a lot of it was to do with affirmations, like positive affirmations and positive self-talk, and even just sticking up sticky notes saying I am enough, I am loved, I am worthy. It's eventually it does get ingrained into your mindset, and you know, you do start to believe those words, don't you?
yeah at our UBU, that's the monthly thing, we actually, that is what is all over the yard, our signs of you're amazing, even the tablecloths, you are amazing, you are loved, you know, don't look back, you're not going that way anymore, you know. I get it, and thank you for sharing that.
It's important, because I think, you know, anything that we can do to help survivors out there to, first of all, gain that self-love. And I've been talking about this recently, where I believe that we need to marry ourselves first before we even enter into a relationship and get married to anybody, because, you know, without us loving ourselves and being true to ourselves, how can we contribute towards a healthy relationship?
Right. That's right.
Possible. Yeah, because otherwise what we're doing is entering into a relationship where we're wanting that other person to fill in, you know, the gaps that we have, and to fill in that, you know, the lack of love that we have for ourselves. And that's very unhealthy, so I figured, because then you're attracting the wrong people into your life.
That's very true. That's probably why many of us who have been assaulted don't have the healthy relationships and don't stay married, because everything you're saying is spot on. Although I don't think I realized that. I didn't think it was my fault that, you know, it was always just, oh, well, you know, another one's gone, but another one bites the dust.
I know. I was counting them on my hands. I was like, oh, here we go. 7 relationships. Yay. Come on. Who's next?
Yep. But you don't think about, like, you just said it and it makes so much sense. But even with you just now saying that, I don't think that ever, even though I'm doing all these things, I knew they're right and they felt good. But I think you just put it like in a nice little box with a bow on it. And I don't think that most people who have been assaulted love themselves very much. And so they don't think about, oh, I need to love myself first. It just doesn't resonate. And that's why I think you said it took a couple decades. It took me some decades. But with the support and with the love of being able to say it out loud or in whichever manner you choose, I think that that message can be received so much earlier, and so many years won't be wasted on, you know, just blindly making it day by day.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as we come to the end, I just have a few questions just to put you on the spot, because I like doing that. So what is your biggest regret up until date?
Oh, my biggest regret is that my behavior, the PTSD, I had no idea what was going on, but I think I hurt a lot of people, and because I couldn't maintain a relationship, you know, I wasn't the person that I am today. I was much more self-centered, maybe, or the best word I can say is weird. Like I didn't operate in the same world that everybody else did. And I think I did hurt people, and I probably could have been a better mom. I have 3 kids and they're all, you know, older now. And, I moved out like 3 years later and got married when I was 20, like you said, running. And had children, and I think I probably could have been a better mom. I wasn't a bad mom. I mean, I didn't hurt them or anything, but I think I could have maybe been a more complete person if I had had the help.
Yeah, and I guess because something which I struggle with is it's just that presence, you know, being present. And I think maybe that's what you were lacking, because you were so traumatized. It's difficult to accept where you are because you're just stuck in the past, aren't you?
Yeah. You're surviving day by day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And looking back to when you were kind of, you know, in your late teens after the incident happened, what's the one thing that you'd like to say to that younger child of yours, the inner child?
It was not your fault. And that you are loved.
Yeah.
And get the support. Don't worry about what other people may say or do. Take care of you.
Oh, I love that. Wow. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I think that finishes us off nicely on a beautiful, positive note. So thank you very much, Chris, for sharing such a sad yet inspiring story. I think you're amazing, and you've just come such a long way after suffering for so long. And, you know, for anybody who has been through such a traumatizing event, I know that, you know, an easy way out is to actually, you know, end your life. But I think for a lot of us who are still here, you know, it says a lot about us that, you know, we're born to thrive, we're born to inspire. And, you know, we're still here today because we've got so much beauty within us that we need to share with the world. And I think you are a prime example of that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And on that note, we will say bye. And I will add a link to Chris's website and any other social media links that Chris might have, including her Facebook group that you may join, because I think that, you know, this group, it's about to hit off, because I feel there's so many people in need of this support right now. And and I wish you all the success with that, Chris. I truly do.
Thank you so much. And thank you for allowing me on your show. I really appreciate it.
And while this episode comes to an end, you may want to check out my book, Victim to Victor, now available on audio, and where I have shared my journey of evolving through self-help and a determination to cast off my damaging past. My goal is to reach out to fellow survivors of abuse and provide hope and motivation in their lives. I hope that I can help victors transform their lives and achieve amelioration in the process of discovering their true self. I also have a 12-week self-development plan, which is absolutely free, and it aims to guide you on your journey to recovery. You can find the link in the description below. Please like this podcast and tag or share it with somebody whom you know is going through a similar situation and may need help. I will be back with another podcast soon. Until then, take care and stay empowered.